welcome to Neighborhood Church. To learn more about who we are as a community or to financially support Neighborhood, go to neighborhoodchurchmn.org. Enjoy the message.
All right. Well, all the kids are downstairs already screaming and having fun the way God intended. All right. So, just again, thank you for coming to church on a beautiful weekend. Is the smoke impacting anyone else? Me? Oh, man. Last night, like, we stubbed outside for a little bit, and I had a hard time breathing. And as you can see, I'm a specimen of an athlete. So, right? And so the smoke does make things. But also, thank you for the parents who bring your kids so they can go downstairs and play. And, of course, thank you to the volunteers that we couldn't do it without you. And I've said it multiple times, but I love this community. I love this church. It's a place where you can be your fullest self, especially like my parents brought their dog. Charlie is welcome to be his full or her fullest self as well. If you have a dog, leave it at home because my parents didn't ask me, all right? They're kind of doing the reverse when I was a kid, right? You just do it, and they're like, oops, I didn't know I was supposed to do that. Dogs, I was joking. You can bring your dog. I always want to bring my dog, but my dog would probably lick all of you and then pee on everything too, probably, because that's how he shows love, especially. I am going to start my message instead of talking about dogs urinating. So we are continuing our series on Psalms. And here's the thing. Psalms has been this historical book that was written like someone who had like an earworm, someone who had an idea, someone who felt inspired, someone who felt like they had a mantra, something that they felt was inside of them that was full of grief or full of joy or full of wisdom that they wrote down that I don't necessarily think was going to be like for thousands and thousands of years. I imagine it was like something they had like an idea, they sang about it, they thought about it, they wrote it down, and then it got left in, right? But we've been using it as people inspired by this book for generations and generations, which is good news because over the holiday weekend, there's a lot that happened, right? Like there was this big, beautiful bill that passed. And I mean, if you've been coming to church here for longer than like a second, you know that I'm a bleeding heart liberal, right? And so there's gonna be some things that I feel that I don't necessarily agree with. But then I felt like I was taking crazy pills. Honestly, I felt like, am I missing something? Because I heard Congress men and women saying that they voted for it, but they hoped the other branch of government was going to cancel it or change it. And one senator said, I hope it goes back to the House and they can save it, essentially, even after that person voted for it. So they, I'm like, this is how politics are. And I'm a deeply political person. And I'm like, this is never going to go far enough. Some politics is really good. I think we should be engaged politically. I think it's a sacred thing. It's a really good thing. But it's never going to, like, ever be enough. It can do some good. It can do some harm, regardless of what party or what system that you are a part of. And then, if you read about it or you heard about it, how it disproportionately benefits one at the expense of the other. I happen to be in the category of the other. I'm not at the category that benefits the most of, since I'm not terribly wealthy. I am incredibly privileged, and we get paid a fair, all those things. But then as I was seeing these things come out, I was feeling like, why do we, people who don't make a lot of money, always vote and enact policies that continually, both liberal and conservative policies that continue to benefit wealthy people over and over and over? And I'm not against wealthy people, but I just had this little glimpse of like, why do we keep doing this? Why does this keep happening of where there's a group of people who excel, who get more, have a lot of influence, and then tell other people, no, you're doing this for the good of the country, which really, I just had this feeling of like, is there really hope? Right? Is there, like, are we ever going to make our way through? Is this what it's going to be like for me, my kids, if I'm lucky enough to have grandkids, great-grandkids, the same stories being told over and over again? So I had those feelings. And then, I don't know if anyone else does this, but, like, I have a couple of friends that are more conservative than I am, and I always want to text them, like, mocking jokes or things that just make me feel better for a moment until I'm like, oh, maybe I shouldn't say that to a friend, right? Then I don't do it. Then when I don't do it, I slap myself in the back. Like, I'm such a good person. Then I'm like, but maybe I should, right? So I live in this, like, this toxic cycle, which is just a sign of, like, I don't know how to process my anger. I don't know how to process my lack of hope or my despair. And I don't always know how to process of someone who is wealthy enough and looking at, well, I'm okay. What about the people who aren't okay? Like, all those feelings, that's what Psalms are for. It goes from Psalms talking about curb stomping their enemies to wanting to be raging at God for God not being enough to feeling great. Some of those are in the same Psalms, to feeling despair and loss and then feeling indifference and feeling worshipful and everything in between, because that is what it means to be human, is to be messy. The Bible is messy. Psalms are messy. Then you throw on top of that, you throw in the floods that happened in Texas. All this happened in the same weekend. And it was really hard, obviously, to see the pictures, to hear the stories. I was listening to NPR, and they were sharing stories of people who lost people that got ripped out of their arms in the water. And as you listen to it, you're like, well, I'm thankful that I'm with the people I love. But then I'm like, well, there's tons of families that lost the people that they love. And then I go to, and there's tragedies that happen every single day that we never hear of. People dying out of poverty, domestic violence, right? Like, then it just, again, so I don't have a lot of hope of humanity after the Big Beautiful Bill. I see that, and then I see the political fallout of both progressives and conservatives trying to blame and shift, and there's this moment of, like, how are we going to do this? Which fits perfectly, because we're talking about Psalm 27. Which is this beautiful, erratic psalm that I feel, at least for me, gave me some hope. I feel like it captured a lot of what I was feeling. So what we're going to do is I'm going to read it, and then we're going to, like, take it section by section, give a little commentary and and some thoughts. So Psalm 27 in the NIV reads like this. The Lord is my light and my salvation, in whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life, of whom shall I be afraid? When the wicked advance against me to devour me, it is my enemies and my foes who will stumble and fall. Though an army besiege me, my heart will not fear. Though war break out against me, even then I will be confident. One thing I ask of the Lord, and this only do I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze on the beauty of the Lord and to seek them in his temple. From the day of trouble he will keep me safe in his dwelling. They will hide me in the shelter of their sacred tent and set me high upon a rock. Then my head will be exalted above the enemies who surround me, and their sacred tent I will sacrifice with shouts of joy. I will sing and make music to the Lord. Hear my voice when I call, Lord. Be merciful to me and answer me. My heart says, if you seek their face, your face, Lord, I will seek. Do not hide your face from me, and do not turn your servant away in anger. You have been my helper. Do not reject me or forsake me, God, my Savior. Though my father and mother forsake me, the Lord will receive me. Teach me your way, Lord. Lead me in a straight path because of my oppressors. Do not turn me over to desire of my foes, for false witnesses rise up against me, spouting malicious accusations. Yet I remain confident of this. I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord. Be strong and take heart. And wait for the Lord. That's rich. I love that psalm. The first thing it talks about is how that there is this, the Lord is my light and my salvation, whom shall I fear? Here the psalmist is making, from the very beginning, this point of that there is pain, there is oppression, there is grief, there is loss, there is violence, there is poverty. There is all these things that add up to the stress and anxiety in our life, and the source of those things is not God. That's what they're saying. They're saying we have created systems, we as humans, we've created systems that benefit some over the other, and that's not God. That's us. Some people historically like to blame Satan. They use the word the enemy. They use the devil. And if that brings you some solace, that's great. But it's the things that we have created that can leave people out, that cause pain, that cause violence. It's the things we vote for over and over and over again that, like, perpetuate this war machine, all these things, right? And then there's the things we can't see. We can see the effects of racism. right? But how do you point it out? Homophobia, transphobia, right? People who are differently abled for us that we don't understand, why do we have to have these doorways? Like, we have all these things we feel we might not be able to point out in concrete ways that are continuing and bringing injustice and oppression and grief and loneliness and pain in our lives. And God is not the source. Instead, they say what? It says, God is my light. In the Hebrew tradition, in the stories, the idea of light being this hope is what they would associate in the stories of like the heroes of faith. Think about David and Goliath, right? Which I believe to be a story, right? And you've probably heard messages on David and Goliath, like, what are the Goliaths in your life and we need to get them down, right? That's great. But the whole point of it is that if God is not the oppressor, that means God is not a bigger bully than the bullies. That's what we want, right? David and Goliath, the way that David beat this huge giant wasn't that he got ripped. It wasn't that he started doing roids. It wasn't that he started doing like a keto diet. It was that he had this humbleness, this simpleness, this innocence, you might say this light that drove him, that said, if God is for us, who can be against us? As the whole army stands back and says, we can't fight this giant, this boy, this teenager steps and says, like, who's going to stop me? This idea of God being this light is this inner fortitude, is this inner confidence. It is something that drives us. So they start the psalm by saying that there is this light, that God is not the oppressor, but God is delivering us from these things. Then it says, one thing I ask of the Lord is to dwell in the house of the Lord, to gaze on the beauty of the Lord and seek God in the temple. This is not a craving just for more church. This is not about dogma. This is not about more rituals. All those things are great, especially the church piece, obviously, because you're here. But when they're saying, I wait to be in the house of the Lord, is like this metaphor. It is this invitation that the house of the Lord is anywhere where justice and love, believing, inclusion, where that lives is the house of the Lord. And that's good news, because instead of saying, hey, to get the best of God, we have to go here. To get the best of God, we have to be something other than ourselves. They're saying everywhere you go, there's an opportunity, there's a place to be at this table with God. And why is that good news? Because when you feel over a holiday weekend and you're sitting at the end of the dock, I got really sunburned and I'm thinking about lost life. I'm thinking about how are we going to make a difference for my kids when they're adults? When I think about the challenges that my family, Nikki and I, have had a walk through, and we're going to continue walk through, and those are never going to end. The good news is, even in that despair, even in that questioning, even in that loneliness, there is a temple, there is a presence, there is a real God, there is this light that is available to all of us. And the good thing is, not just available to us, like to me individually, it's available to us collectively. And there's pockets, right? There's pockets when the house of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, feels alive. And there's other times other people say, isn't this so great? And I'm like, not really. That it's not about if I receive it. It's not just if I always believe it. It's not always if I'm like swimming and I'm so happy and exuberant about it. It's that the house of the Lord is even available to people who are feeling lonely, despair, cranky, joyful, happy. Like, this presence of God is everywhere. And the good news also for that is, how many people are walking through our neighborhoods who just want to belong? How many people are looking for a place where this idea of this temple, this house, this refuge, they don't even know how to put language in, but we're all looking for a home. Like in the Psalms, what they're speaking of over and over again is this idea of exile. Part of the Hebrew faith, part of the Jewish faith that I love is that their stories made up in exile. And even now, these progressive rabbis I've talked to says, we're always, all of us are in exile. We're all trying to find home. We're all trying to find paradise. All trying to find what they call this land of the living. So there's this hope that there is belonging. Friends, family, maybe even what we call God, is not somewhere else. It's right here. Any space where divine love is made real. Oh, that's so good. Then it says, for the day of the trouble, he will keep me safe in his dwelling, and I will sing and make music to the Lord. I never thought about this. Like, why do they spend so much time talking about music in singing. Right? Like, what he's saying is, like, what he is doing and implying is punk rock. Right? Does anyone here like punk rock? Yeah. Really, Diana? I didn't know. Of course. Of course it fits your personality. Yes, all right? Punk rock, all right, is all on this, like, how do we stick it to the man? How are we cutting edge? How are we trying to do things with rage and chorus? Right? How, like, I love, this isn't so much punk rock, but like Rage Against the Machine, even when I was a young kid. I remember, oh, mom, my mom is here. She's going to love this story. I remember I loved Nirvana, and I had a magazine in there. Kurt Cobain was wearing a shirt that says this political statement. Right, I guess I won't share it. And it was promoting violence in the form of like pushing back against oppression. And I'm like, that's so cool. I'm 13. I'm a little punk rocker. And so I made out of insulation board, because that's art to me, and I wrote it on there. And my mom came downstairs and it's sitting on my wall, and I knew she wasn't gonna like it. I'm like, this is so cool. I'm sticking it to the machine right now. All right, my mom, do you remember this? My mom took one look at it, and she goes, oh, no, took it and broke it over her knee. You have no memory of this, Mom? Oh, God, it was so great. And I'm like, whoa, Mom's punk rock too, but against me, I'm the machine. Right? What the psalmist is saying is, I'm going to sing, because when you are being oppressed, when you're feeling the resistance, when you're feeling down, when you're feeling a lack of hope, and it might be capitalism, it might be your family, you might feel like your body is betraying you, whatever it might be, right? When you feel oppressed and you feel other people and other systems and other communities or other groups are attacking you or leaving you intentionally or unintentionally, but you still feel it, what the psalm is saying is, I'm still going to sing, because you might control economically, you might control physical violence on my body, you might enact these laws to harm these people. Even what you do, you can't stop me from singing, because that's punk rock. When we get together and sing, you are good, you are good, and I love that they put the O, right? You are good, you are good, oh, it's my favorite part. That is punk rock. That's pushing back. That's resistance, by continuing to say, we're going to trust, even though I don't feel good, I'm going to trust this God is good. There's this, do you remember Don Williams, Nikki? I mean, Don Williams was this old Vineyard theologian and scholar, and I got to meet him when he was much older, and he fell asleep a lot. What I remember about Don Williams is always falling asleep. And I remember him saying this long time ago. And he said, he was talking on, even when the enemy, is the word he'd often use, has its boot on my throat, I'm still going to sing. And now I think, I'm like, it's kind of cheesy, but it was inspiring to me, and it still is. Of whatever I can't control might impact me, might influence me, might shape the people I love, I still have a choice to sing. I still have a choice to believe that there's something good and that there's something beautiful. And if I hold on to that, no matter what a big, beautiful bill does, no matter what climate changes, no matter what money I have or don't have, or security I have or don't have, nothing can touch what's inside. And so when me choosing to move and believe that love can transform not just me but the world, I believe that. There's days I believe it less. There's days it's hard for me to move in it. But when I choose to hold on, then Jesus says to love God is to love people, and the people is whoever is right in front of me. It's the only thing I got. I'm not running for Congress. I can't change that bill. Right? I can't reverse cloud seed, if anyone knows what it is, right? I can't manipulate the weather to be those things, but what I can is I can believe that love can transform. And when I choose to believe that and I sing that, that's punk rock, that's resistance. Do not hide your face from me. Though my father and mother forsake me, the Lord will receive me. This one, to me, is the most obvious. We have all been rejected and left out in the cold at one point or some way in our life. And maybe you're the one who had to set up the boundaries. Maybe someone else had to set up a boundary for you. Maybe you have a friend from college that's no longer talking to you. Maybe you have an aunt. Maybe you have a parent. Maybe you have an ex-partner that you feel betrayed or let go by. here the psalmist saying, even though my own mother and father are rejecting me, you embrace me. And this is the power of the gospel. This is the power of church. This is the power of us. Maybe you've been like a lot of us, story of neighborhood church is that maybe you were once evangelical, maybe part of a tradition, and maybe some people identify as ex-evangelical. Maybe you still carry the scars, or maybe like me, you still carry a little bit of that rage. Why me? I played by the rules. And you feel not just the cost of being excluded, but you still have the memories of when you were included. And you miss those things. Like the psalmist is speaking to something real of saying, even though I'm rejected, even though I'm put aside, even though I'm not believed, even though, like, funny, people believe my husband before they believe me, even all that BS, I can say that word, right? Even in all that toxicity, there is still a God that embraces me. There is the power of embrace. To embrace means you have to be present. You guys ever heard the idea of parenting is 90% showing up? It's true, right? Those who are older than me, like the more and more it's like, how do I be a good parent? It's like, I just have to be in the conversation. I don't have to have the answer. I just have to be around. This is the gift that we offer one another. Story. 2 days ago, I met a gentleman, and we were talking, and he said something on something going on in drinking. And I said, yeah, I remember when I was drinking, we did that. It was kind of funny. We laughed about it. And I said, yeah, but, you know, I've been sober for 14, something like that, months. And he instantly, he's like, what, did you do that treatment thing? Did you have to go to treatment? Like, I'm like, is he mocking? I never met anyone who mocked treatment before, right? I've never met anyone like that. And I said, no, that wasn't my journey. But no matter someone's journey to being their fullest self, what a beautiful thing. And he stopped and he's like, and for 20 minutes, he told me his story of being in treatment just 5 weeks ago and how it saved his life. Totally different story than I thought, right? I maybe said 10 words. And the words I asked were like, tell me more about that. That's interesting. And after about 20, 30 minutes, telling me about his pain in his back from being a veteran and how he just doesn't feel believed, talking to his own doctors about pain, all these things and what it cost his family, right? And how drinking helped him for a point. If any addicts here, drinking helps you until it doesn't, right? Using helps you until it doesn't. Spending money helps you until it doesn't, right? Whatever it is. And how treatment saved his life. And then he just stopped. He just stopped. And I looked at him, and he's like, you're the first person I've talked to since treatment about this. I started crying. I could cry right now, right? Because I cry all the time. And he said, thank you. And that was it. Conversation was done. I gave him my card. So you can call, text me. There's a church full of people that were all in wildly different places, and you would thrive here. And I hope he shows up. But I can tell you that I felt blessed just being in presence with this guy. Isn't this what we want? Isn't this what we kind of crave for the people that we love? From our friends, from our coworkers, maybe even from strangers, from our politicians, from celebrities. Do you ever wonder why we want to get autographs or get selfies with people we've never met before and we're never going to see again? Because we want something to be believed, to be connected to something we think is good or beautiful or better or successful. We just want to be known. This is the gift we offer as Jesus-looking people, as humans, is a gift of presence. That's what the psalm is saying. Even though I'm rejecting my mom and father, God embraces me because God believes in who you are, not just who you're going to be, not just when you're good, not just when you believe like this is when I'm worthy of being believed or loved by God or my partner or my kids or my friends or society. We all play by these rules. Like, I have to look like I'm 25 in order to be really, really attractive or believed or included. I have to have this level of intellect and use these kind of words and know this kind of enough trivia in order to carry on this conversation. Maybe, like, I feel like I deal with, we just talked this yesterday, imposter syndrome. Anytime I'm about to do something new, I'm like, who in the world would ever show up to that. Like, why would anyone ever want to discuss or hear those things? This is how I believe in myself. And every time, there's at least, right, people who are willing to be in presence with one another. So here's my challenge, right? I decided that since it's summer and it's shiny and happy, I'm going to give just one little nudge to us as Neighborhood Church. And if you're listening online or on the podcast, this goes to all of us as well. I don't know if you know this or not. We're a small church, right? And there's some things that are amazing about being a small church, and there's some things that are really difficult of being a small church. Like, we wanted to join a church softball team, which is like a living hell to me, all right? I'm not supposed to use that word. I was talking about a place, right? But if we wanted to start a church softball team, we're the team. That's the bad news, right? You're like, I don't even like softball. I'm sorry, you do now, right? The benefit of being a small church, so we're a small church, and we don't all know each other. We don't all know each other's names. And if you're here and you deal with social anxiety, or you're an introvert, or you have trauma, like, I'm all three of those things, right? And you might feel like, it's kind of hard to learn people's names or to put myself out there. I totally get that. I'm not here to shame you. But let me give you a challenge as the pastor of this church to the rest of us. The gift of presence is the best thing we have to offer one another. And we all love the idea of, like, if anyone needs help, if anyone needs anything, we can start a GoFundMe, we get a meal train, right? We can scrape paint, we can do all those things. Yes, we can. But the only way we can do that is if we're present with one another. If we continue to grow, which I believe we are and we will continue to grow, the only way we can grow and be healthy and retain this value of presence is if we embody it and we extend it now. You know who gets to do that? We all want someone else to do it, right? We want someone else to start it. We want someone else to lead that group or lead that small group. We want someone else to start the conversation, introduce themselves to us. I get it. I want that as well. But we get to be a group of people who are committed to presence. Because like the conversation with that guy, he needed someone 5 weeks out of treatment just to listen. I'm not an expert. He just heard that I'm sober, and that was enough for him to, like, boo. And you've been there before? You talk to a stranger, your Uber driver, you talk to the back of a head, and all of a sudden you're talking about your childhood trauma that you even talked to anyone except your therapist, right? I've been there. We get to be that to one another. We get to be that to the people in our lives, but we have to do it on purpose and with purpose. Does it take work? Yes. It really does. For you to walk up and say, I've asked your name 30 times. This is what I feel like I do. I don't remember your name. Can you remind me of your name again? Right? It's embarrassing, sure, but I'm willing to do it over and over again because I deeply believe that gift of presence can transform our lives and the neighborhoods we live in. Oh, I love that. And where we end. God wrote this down. God is the one who receives us when empire abandons us. Teach me your way, Lord, and I remain confident of this. I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord. Be strong. And it says again, wait for the Lord. The psalmist ends with this concept of a land of the living. If we can wait on God, if we can give presence to one another, if we can believe that there's a light that can transform us, if we believe there's a God who's good, who we can transform lives and maybe systems and communities, not through being a bigger bully, but through believing that this light and love and presence can actually, like, not just make people feel good, but can transform lives. If we really believe that, God is saying, then you're in the land of the living. The land of the living is not this place we go to at some point. Some people think the land of living happens when we die. It's like, well, why do we have to die to get to living? Why do we have to decease in order to get the good stuff? The land of living is this idea, this dream of where, like, the shalom. Shalom is not just peace. Shalom is not just a lack of stress. Shalom is like jumping into a lake and being fully immersed in the fullness and joy and pleasure and goodness of God. That shalom, the reason that it's peace is because you're in the fullness of the presence and the goodness of Christ, of God. The land of the living is a reality that's here right now when we embody it. So here's my encouragement. If you are stressed, you're anxious, you're happy, sunburned, wish you were sunburned. Oh man, on Twitter someone put out over the 4th and it said, be careful out there, big weekend of sizing your family up to other families. I'm like, what are they talking about? I'm like, oh, pictures of what people do over holidays. And you begin to like, well, how come I didn't get invited to that? Right? You been there? How come we don't have a cabin? Or how come we don't get to go to Carlton? Everyone gets to go to Carlton if you want, right? Whatever it is you feel this lack of something. Even in that lack of something, the land of living is not far off. It's right here. Of being able to own, acknowledge, I'm lonely, I'm sad, I'm hurt, I'm anxious, I'm excited. Regardless of where you're at, I'm going to pray. And if this idea of light feels enticing to you, this idea of believability, if this idea of presence, where it can start is with this God being present and available to us. So let's pray. So God, please don't turn your face from us. And if you are my light, whom shall I fear? And for those of us who feel the darkness, those of us who feel the heaviness, those of us who feel the pain, or even like the idea of pain of losing something or someone we love, those of us who feel like we're in a good spot, those who feel confident in their body, and those who feel disgusted or in pain with their body, God, will your light come close? And thank you that you embrace, that you give us the presence of yourself, and how we can be in the temple of the Lord, and we realize that we're never alone. So Holy Spirit, will you come and bring life and light and hope. Hope that that you're enough. Hope that there's a God that maybe could be this good, and maybe we could be that good. And lastly, I pray that we can extend that presence and that beauty and that goodness to the people around us. Will you give us wisdom and compassion and wonder and curiosity to maybe talk less and ask more? And that there can be transformation in life for the other and for us as well. Because in the land of the living, it's not me living at the expense of my sister, my brother, or my non-binary friend. The land of the living is we all live as our fullest self, because that is what you invite us to be. And that's what we choose today, to walk in the land of the living. And we love you. Amen. All right, friends. Well, thank you for being here on this beautiful smoky Sunday. Thank you for the beautiful kids banging on who knows what down there. It's like, yeah, it's a great way to end this. I'm banging. I don't know what this is. So if you'd like to talk, or you'd like to pray, or you'd like to process, I'm going to be here until the lights turn off. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.